Before the show starts, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor. We've partnered with CoinBeast Media to bring you guys top quality educational Bitcoin content. They have Bitcoiners who are experts in certain areas of Bitcoin called pros who will be presenting on our show over the course of the next couple months. So make sure you guys tune in every single Wednesday to make sure you don't miss them. You can also connect with their pros one-on-one to get a personalized lesson in a certain area of Bitcoin to help walk you through any and all of your questions. They also have wonderfully written articles on their website that are jam-packed full of information, so make sure to check out their website at coinbeast.com. Their vision is very in line with ours, so we're beyond excited to be collaborating with them to bring all of you guys good quality Bitcoin content. So without further ado, let's get into it.
All right, what's up, class? This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and we're back for another episode. We're at block height 686,035, and the current price per Bitcoin is $37,554. So it's been a week, guys, and for everyone keeping tabs, this is the week of Bitcoin Conference. It's a pretty empty class, so I'm guessing everyone's out there having a blast. But without further ado, we got Jonathan Hamill, or at Jay Hamill on Twitter, representing CoinBeast. So, Jonathan, you want to introduce yourself a little bit, and then we'll jump right into it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here. So, a short resume of my maybe Bitcoin credential. I'm involved in the Bitcoin scene, mostly in Canada for the last, publicly for the last, let's say, 5 years. My background is in tech, but I'm involved also mostly in the economic sides since a couple of years as well. I'm in a day-to-day life, everyday life. I'm an executive at in a mining exploration business, but I'm also part of the few Bitcoin mining ventures privately. I'm also an associate researcher at the Montreal Economic Institute, which is a free market, a think tank that is globally known to put emphasis on finding market-based solution for public policy. So I'm fairly present in the media on a weekly basis on various subjects, mostly economics and public policies.
Awesome, dude. Let's go. All right, so I think the first one, this is a broad question, but what is your go-to Bitcoin shill? To someone that is new to Bitcoin or a little curious but has no idea, so it could be as wide-ranging as you want, but what do you usually hit people the first time if someone asks you, what's your go-to Bitcoin shill?
You mean for content?
No, just like if someone asked you why should they own some Bitcoin, like what rabbit hole would you go down? Like what? Okay. What angle would you hit them with?
Yeah, to me the easiest path to understanding Bitcoin value proposition is the supply limit. So to me, it's like it's still the key feature in Bitcoin monetary policy is, and it's even more evident in the last, let's say, 18 months. And we're seeing it also like in similar asset class. To me, like the limited supply of Bitcoin is the killer feature. So once they understand that, and after that, you can probably dig down a little bit deeper on why Bitcoin is unique versus all the other coins, because it's probably the follow-up question is why Bitcoin is unique when you can create like all the other shit coins. So to me, like, it's really the starting point, like making them understand that Bitcoin has a limited supply, which is fixed in time, which is also very easily auditable, unlike arts, unlike gold, unlike real estate is auditable, but it's pretty dispersed and it's hard to assess in real time. So to me, like, this is really the killer feature, and people like can can grasp it pretty quickly. After that, they start to dig, and but it's a pretty good starting point by experience.
What do you, John? What do you mean by mining exploration? I've never heard that term before.
Oh well, it's in Canada. Canada is one of the biggest mining jurisdiction in the world. So it's really like natural resources. I'm focused mainly on gold. So we have a few companies listed on the Toronto Stock
Exchange. Oh, okay. Yeah. You mean like actual gold mining?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we don't mine. Actually, all of my venture, we don't mine. We basically acquire properties. We do exploration. We do partnership with more major companies. So it's a pretty interesting industry, to be honest. My family has been in it for a couple of generations. So it's I was always interested by the commodity market, whether it's oil and gas or minerals. I prefer gold, mostly gold, but the base metals, another game like copper, zinc. It's but Canada has been one of the biggest mining jurisdiction in the world, Quebec especially. So
So when you said that, I was like, I assumed Bitcoin mining. So I was like, I've never heard that term before. I gotta ask.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the funny part is I'm also like pretty big in Bitcoin mining as well. But it's, I think that the industry is maturing slowly but surely. This cycle, we're seeing like much more capital invested in Bitcoin mining. We're seeing like there's a few publicly listed Bitcoin mining entities now. Like here in Quebec, we have Bitfarms, who are very soon they're going to be listed on the NASDAQ global listing. But it's still like a very, very big gap between like the state of the current like precious metal gold market. It's trillions of dollars in the market. So this is a very mature market. It's pretty interesting. I don't think it's not contradicting. It's the base value proposition is the same. It's always about supply, and there's always opportunities like Bitcoin mining. Once you find energy and you can find some miners, there's always opportunity to mine profitably. And it's the same for precious metal. There's always some interesting like in Quebec here, we're expanding mines that have more than 100 years history, like around the camps. So it's people always think that the resources are finite and it's gonna end. It's always like gonna end, but it's same oil and gas. We're finding oil in Texas while people were saying that it's gonna end for pretty much every year since 100 years. So it's pretty amazing.
That's super interesting, man. So considering you come from a gold mining, a commodities background, do you compare Bitcoin as just a commodity, or do you look at it more or less? Like, what's your view considering your family comes from that perspective?
I think the base assumption is I kind of like the quasi-currency expression. So it's Bitcoin is money by the traditional definition of money, whether it's classical liberal or Austrian economics definition of money. So anything can be money, and the people, if this is well explained, one of the go-to, I think, paper is one of the many Save Dean publication on the subject and podcast. It's like whatever people elect as money can be money. And gold has been elected money in history because of its unique feature. And I think Bitcoin has the same kind of feature, and probably even better on some terms, but it's exactly the same concept. So people elect the best money and they're going to use it, or they're going to hoard it. It's basically, I would say, it's a commodity with quasi-currency feature. But like in the traditional definition of money, Bitcoin is money for sure.
Yeah, I'd agree 100%, but I'd like to, you know, dig into your brain a little bit. Tony, I saw you unmuted yourself. Did you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. Just to compare, what do you think is the ecological footprint of mining gold versus mining Bitcoin? Which one you can say, like, right now, as is, which one is more, let's say, eco-friendly, mining gold or Bitcoin?
Oh, Bitcoin by far. I mean, gold mining is one of the most I mean, mining in general is one of the most, well, any industry has an impact on the environment, and I'm pretty strict on that, in the sense that I've been like a very, very early bullshit caller on the whole ESG trend. I mean, it's to me, it's not sustainable. Especially we saw it in Canada with oil exploration company and big oil company trying to pandering to ecologist activists, and at the end of the day, you're trying to please people that wants to destroy your industry. So it's to me, it's very clear that producing energy or mining and producing metals that are essential for our everyday activities has an impact on the environment, but we always must compare the total benefits of what it produces and what it brings to society. So people like those kids, they complain about the environmental footprints of Bitcoin, but they do that on their iPhones, which use rare earths from many places of the world. So it's really incoherent to advocate for let's say a nominal reduction of energy production, and while enjoying the status of living that we are doing it. But for sure, like going back to the question, gold mining in general is by far, by order of magnitude, like bigger than Bitcoin in terms of environmental footprint, for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we had Denver Bitcoin on, and we had Hodl Tarantula on from Coinbeast. And in my opinion, they just completely destroyed that FUD. But as you can see, what's been happening the last week or continuous, we've been getting really hit hard with the mining energy FUD. And I'm personally, like, I feel you get a great eloquent answer to that. But for anyone that would still doubt you right now, what would you tell them? Because, I mean, you basically did it already. But if someone that still doesn't believe you on the mining energy FUD, would you just double down and say Bitcoin needs more energy? Or would you reframe the question and try to play along with their parameters?
Yeah, it's the thing is, it's kind of like the whole woke debate. I mean, the only ways to win this game is not to play. Because at the end of the day, they're always going to be some kind of... They're always going to find a way to impose more restrictions. So nobody's going to win at the end. So the only way to win this debate is to have the exact opposite argument that... and I really like Francis Pouliot... expression. It was like cry harder. I mean, there's nothing more you can do. Bitcoin's going to consume more energy, and you just have to cry harder, because it's just going to happen. If you ban it in Canada or India or wherever you want, people are just going to find energy sources, because people are chasing opportunities organically, and it's just going to happen, like it happened with gold, like it happened with any industries in the world. So to me, like, it's really a non-starter to try to please this ESG / environmental friendly Bitcoin mining. We must like escape from this downward spiral, and Bitcoin and Bitcoiners and the Bitcoin industry in general has this advantages of not being like I would say imputable to corporate overlords, and so we have this liberty and freedom to express ourselves. Most of us are now financially I mean, free in some kind of sense. So this is a debate that should be like that should be done with courage and not backing down on any terms. And to be honest, it's like the future of Western civilization pretty much rests on whether or not we're gonna harness more energy sources, or we're gonna accept to reduce nominally the amount of energy we're gonna use in the future. So it has pretty big ramification when you look at it.
Yeah, awesome. I'm glad you brought up about the future, because that's where I was gonna go next. Like, in your opinion, what does the future of Bitcoin mining hold, or even just energy use in at large?
Yeah, once you dig, to me, what was a big revelation, sorry, of exploring more, like I was aware of oil trading, I mean, exploration in general, but I was not aware of all the feature. And the thing you understand once you dig deeper into the energy business is how imperfect the whole thing is. So when you think like maybe like you create energy, electricity, and you can store magically energy in battery, and it's just like it solved the problem, and it's really not the case. So this is actually the biggest, I think, advantages of fossil fuel. It's easy to store, transport. It's fairly predictable in terms of substances. So on a chemical basis. So this is the major innovation, I think, in the modern era, was the way we harness the potential of fossil fuels and in many other like energy sources, like maybe hydro. So it's a major upgrades in human standard of life. And so this is the first thing you realize is how imperfect the whole energy business is. So there's always wasted energy left and right. To give you a pretty good idea, here in Quebec, where Quebec is one of the biggest hydro producer in the world. We have an expertise dating back almost 60 years. Like Hydro-Québec, which is a national monopoly here, they're consulting like everywhere. Like the Three Gorge Dam in China was made with some expert engineers from Hydro-Québec. So we have a globally recognized expertise in hydro. Hydro-Québec is losing for the last few years $1 billion equivalent a year in excessive electrical capacity they don't sell. So basically how it works with hydroelectricity, you have dams. When the water capacity of the dam is full, you have to release some water. And if you don't have enough clients at the end of the grid, you just have to release water without turbining that water. So basically you're wasting potential revenue. So in Quebec for the last few years, it's been billions of dollars thrown in the water, like literally. So to give you an idea, and now do the same with oil and gas. When you there's a gas extraction, there's always like flaring. Same for solar and wind farms. It's always imperfect because people needs energy at it's not a fixed demand. It's the demand is always fluctuating. So we saw this, I think it was this winter in Texas, when there was the freezing. The grid was not able to follow because they had shut down some gas plant and they were relying more on renewables. So very high level, the whole energy production industry is really imperfect. So there's an imperfection in the energy industry. It's opportunity for arbitrage. It's opportunity for acquiring energy that people don't want. So to me, like, Bitcoin is solving like a major problem there. The ability to monetize wasted energy, but also like stranded energy, which is the case here in the western part of Canada. We have abundant reserves of oil and gas, but we're not able to export it. And the only client we have is the U.S. down south. So they kind of profit from it. And so we have a negative premium on the export of gas. So one way to avoid that is to mine Bitcoin with, let's say, flaring, or even like straight up with natural gas. So in conclusion, to me, like, Bitcoin mining is one of the biggest opportunity for energy producer in the last 50 years. The other opportunities that comes to mind, and there's a very good article from Dan Held on it. I think it's the name is Proof of Work is Efficient. Maybe look at that article. He explained how aluminum production actually came from the same background. It's the same reality behind aluminum production, because it comes from area where they have excessive electrical capacity that they're not able to export. So Iceland was one of them. Quebec initially was a big aluminum producer as well. So instead of like just wasting the energy, you're storing it in the production of the electrolysis. I think it's the process of producing aluminum, which is pretty energy intensive. One modern maybe equivalent of that is hydrogen. Hydrogen production is going to be also energy intensive. So this is pretty much all the same concept of, let's say, channeling excessive and wasted energy into an industrial process that's going to create profit.
Bullish. Let's go. I'm gonna ask you one more mining question. It's a little more speculative, but what currently gets you the most excited about Bitcoin mining, and or the energy use at large? Like you're touching on it already, but just in regards to Bitcoin, what's get you the most excited in the short term future?
To me, I would say it's the combination of like the general bullishness of Bitcoin in general, and I think we've passed like significant threshold in this cycle where people are now agreeing that it's not going to disappear. It's going to become like a bigger part of the financial scene. So I think we Bitcoin is maybe like in its teen years. So it's we all agree that it's going to have like an adult life and it's going to do something, which was not a reality in the last cycle. Like everybody thought it was going either to a million or to zero. I think now it's more equalized, more recognized by the market as well. I mean, like pretty much I'm pretty involved in the traditional finance industry, and like every morning I'm listening to Bloomberg TV, and when they give the market updates, they tell like the status of the S&P Dow futures, they tell the status of the US dollars, the price of gold, and then the price of Bitcoin. It's like it's on pretty much every market updates now. So it's a significant step forward in terms of recognition of the asset. But what brings me like what I'm very bullish on on the combination of the increasingly acceptance of Bitcoin as an asset. On the other side, all the mining ventures I'm interested in now are related to oil and gas. So pretty much like natural gas to me, it's like it's one of the biggest. To me, natural gas is really there. The energy revolution is not like it's not solar and wind. It's natural gas. The way you can harness natural gas, also like LNG, you can export it like pretty easily. The U.S. have been like leaders in that. Like the whole shale revolution, it's amazing. The U.S. being able to become energy independent in the last 15 years is something that we don't talk about enough, to be in my opinion. So to me, like the market is massively discounting the fact that oil and gas is not going away, and there's this trend that jurisdiction are going to ban like internal combustion engine before 2030 or 2035. To me, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be later than that. I don't think we're going to see the oil and gas industry as we know it disappear in our lifetime. So there's a pretty significant windows of opportunity in the next, let's say, 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get on pretty big oil and gas deals to mine Bitcoin. And because this is an energy source that is looked upon. This is politically incorrect, but there is opportunity everywhere in the world. And to me, this is the biggest bullish trend right now related to mining.
Yeah, I'd agree. What I've been seeing about oil and gas, and I'm not too well versed in it, but what I see with natural gas and the likes, and with companies like Upstream Data, it just been blowing my mind. And to see people FUD Bitcoin, it's just you can tell how naive they are. But I really love that answer. And also, I was gonna ask you to transition what your thoughts were in traditional finance at large, and where we are currently in the world when it comes to traditional finance, and you know, like what's going on with inflation and the stimulus bucks and all that coming out of the lockdown. So what do you have any thoughts on that? Do you have any speculations on what may happen?
Yeah. Well, from the first day, I was a lockdown skeptic, like probably on a ideological basis. I think the whole, and now it's becoming increasingly evident that most of the quote conspiracy theorists were mostly right, which is pretty amazing when you look in hindsight. So the response to this quote pandemic was amazing by historical proportion. I mean, the implication of the central bank activity regarding like monetary expansion is without precedent. The U.S. just deposit. I mean, there's a $6 trillion budget, and this is going to be like the the biggest deficit since, I think, World War II, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. So this is not without consequences. People think it's like when you read like comments from central bankers, they all say, oh, it's transitory, it's going to go away, we're just going to go back to normal, and we're just going to forget that we just pretty much gave money to everybody that, well, most of them didn't need it. Like in Canada, the Bank of Canada was by far one of the most active central bank in terms of involvement in the monetary stimulus in the world. I think close to 30% of the bank's asset was created in the last 14 months, which is pretty amazing. Canada spent close to $100 billion giving checks. In Canada, you would receive $2,000, no questions asked, per month during the first 2 months of the pandemic, which is pretty amazing. Afterwards, they started to roll back that a little bit, but they're still like giving massive subsidies to companies who are still forced to be closed down because of the restriction of the COVID restriction. I don't know where you're located in the US, but here in Canada, like Quebec and Ontario, is still pretty much like lockdowns. It's there's some easing, but it's still nowhere near the return to normal. So it's pretty amazing that 14, 15 months down in this pandemic, we're still living like it's almost March 2020. So there's going to be consequence on that. We're already seeing an impact. Like here, the real estate market went ballistic. So mostly single family homes in the neighborhood of big cities. So people are fleeing the cities. We're seeing like houses selling for three times the price of the evaluation with a bidding war. We're seeing the same with pretty much like all the supply chains of pretty much like all the, I would say, luxury items. Let's say cars. I'm a big bike fan, so pretty much all the bikes are sold, from entry level bikes to $20,000 bikes are all sold. So people, it's. I think we're at, there's a unique part of this crisis where people were forced to stay in their home, but at the same time, people made more money, whether in the stock market, whether by stimulus check, and they weren't able to spend it in let's say restaurant or just travel. So people just ordered and accumulated money, and it's not magically gonna be spent. Like all all that was not spent in the last 15 months, we're not going to catch up like in the next next two quarters with that money. So it's interesting to see like the trends on the next few months, but there's definitely going to be an impact. I think like people are increasingly recognizing the value of limited assets. And this is why like it goes back to my introduction on what was the biggest feature of Bitcoin. So this is why I think real estate is going up. Pretty much like everything from classic cars to hearts to like, I don't know if you saw that, but the collection cards are going up like crazy, to like Pokemon cards. Like, what the fuck is that? I didn't even know that was still existing. Look, everything that is in limited supply is going up as crazy, because everything else is expansioning like there's no tomorrow. So to me, like if you have exposure to Bitcoin, I think gold's gonna go up as well. Probably the upside is more limited than Bitcoin, because it's a more mature market. But it's gonna go up as well. So this is like my overall and the inflation, like probably my last word on that. Inflation is much worse than what is stated in the CPI or in the many like arbitrary, like it's tea leaves reading, basically, because what you're seeing on the ground is close to, let's say, 10, 15, 20% inflation in some goods and services. Like, look at the restaurant bill, look at your grocery bill, look at commodities like wood. Basically, then it's much more expensive now to build, let's say, a deck or even a houses. So it's oil, pretty much every commodities went up, copper. So there's going to be an impact on pretty much every retail products and services after that. So it's going to be an interesting, like the next 2-3 years is going to be really interesting, because now we're almost back at normal. But even like the normal pre-pandemic, we're kind of already overextended. Like we never really exited out of the financial crisis of 2008. So this is a discussion I had with one of the leading economists of a major bank in Canada. He says, like, look, we're gonna exit that, we're gonna go back to normal, but back to normal, we're still like in we're still not out of the woods yet. So it's going to be interesting to see like assets like Bitcoin and gold. Are they going to use? I think there's still like tremendous upside in the next 5 years. I think people, because it went up so much in the last year, people think like the cycle is over. I don't think it's over at all. I think we can be like pretty impressed with what's going to come next.
Bullish. Love to hear it. Okay. Concerning what you just said, all of that, what are you looking out for from here on out into the future? It could be just macroeconomic or into Bitcoin or financial traditional markets. Just like from here, where do you think people listening's focus should be towards?
I would say like the first thing to me, like a non-sustainable trend, and I would go like more politically, geopolitically, and maybe on a social aspect as well, is the politicization of everything is not sustainable. So when you just pay attention, like listen to Bloomberg TV, like on a good morning, or just read a business newspaper, like 80% of everything you hear and read now is political. So like climate justice, central bank talking about climate crisis / racial equality. So there's a whole range of topics that are now intervening in traditional market like it didn't happen before. Like there was always like political issues, but now it's everything is so much more political, and I think it's a non-sustainable trend. So I think we're going to see, like, I really like Hans Hermann's Oppa expression. He would say, like, either we're going towards like a massive decentralization, private cities, or we're going towards like a massive authoritarian states, either on the right or the left wing side, so fascist or communism. So to me, like, there's going to be like a pretty big, it has to be like a pretty big switch in the next few years, or maybe going back to something more rational. So I think like what we're seeing right now, look at the states that I implemented like the most, I would say, rigid measures against COVID. So Germany, France, all these states, and also like the states in the US as well, like California, New York, all these leaders, all of the political leaders of these states, they all face like a pretty big backlash in terms of electoral consequences. So there's a good chances that most of them are not going to be reelected. So there's going to be, I think, ideological realignment to something more conservative, which is probably good at the end, because it's, to me, like, it's a non-sustainable trend, which is probably good for Bitcoin. Like you look at the reverse side of that effect, which is pretty good for Bitcoin and art asset in general. But like as a human being, you want to look at, let's say, the next 20 years. Do we want to live a civil war, or we want to go back to something like more sustainable? So to me, like the biggest like macro trends, either in traditional market or Bitcoin, and in general, is to me like it's going back to something more normal, and rolling back on that politicization of everything. To me, like it's a key trend that we must follow. And Bitcoin is like it's a spearhead in that trend, with people that are not afraid to speak against the bullshit. Like identity politics has no place in Bitcoin. Like if people ask for more diversity in Bitcoin developers, they're gonna be told to fuck off, which is what should be done also in traditional corporation, in organization in general. So this is, we need to see that more, and I think like Bitcoin's gonna be at the spearhead of this revolution.
I love that. I couldn't agree more. So to someone that's listened to this whole episode, what would be either your last word on Bitcoin, or just some advice for a new Bitcoiner dipping his toes into this crazy wild world that we call Bitcoin?
My first advice would be like we repeat it so much, so it's kind of like stupid to say it again, but like the best way to learn about Bitcoin, like invest, the best investment in Bitcoin is really knowledge. I mean, you want to maybe acquire a small position, but I mean, don't go all in, or don't do like major transaction until you really understand the value proposition and what it means to be part of Bitcoin. And I think this is like the biggest it's the biggest teachings of all of this. And at the end of the day, it's much more than financial gains. I think to me, Bitcoin as a it's not only like a technology project. It's a human. It's a political project. It's an economical it's a project in economics in general. It's one of the most interesting human endeavor I think we've seen in the last 100 years. This is one of the major innovations. I think to me, it's one of the major technological innovation. It's one of the great protocols, technologically speaking. So, trying to understand what it represents on all these aspects before, like saying, okay, now I get it. So it's don't be afraid to ask questions. People who always say that Bitcoiners are toxic, but they are toxic to people that comes in, and there's this expression, so I'm new to Bitcoin and I'm here to change Bitcoin, so don't be that guy. Like, look at how Elon Musk was pretty much like getting wrecked by people were saying to Elon Musk on Twitter, like, have fun staying poor. This is pretty amazing when you think about it. And there's a reason behind that. So there's no compromise on like people that are getting into Bitcoin and trying to change everything. So trying to learn why it has value and why it is difficult to change Bitcoin, I think is a key aspect in understanding is full potential. So you have to be like kind of humble, and you enter into it whatever your background. If you're a PhD or a pleb coming from whatever sector. You have to look at everything around Bitcoin like with a lot of humility, because it's bigger than anybody in Bitcoin.
I love that. That was great advice. So I'll open it up, guys. If you have a question, more than welcome to ask. If not, we'll be respectful of Jonathan's time. I guess that's it, Jonathan. We like to keep these kind of short and sweet so they're digestible for the listener. We know sometimes Bitcoin podcasts get into the weeds and they go on forever, and a lot of people don't have the time to sit down for 3 hours and get super cosmic. So thank you so much. I got more bullish. I swear I get more bullish every time I listen to these, and I think you laid out a great intro look for a Bitcoiner, something that they could start to wrap their head around and dive down the rabbit hole. So on that note, would you just tell the people where they can find you and what services you may offer to them if they so should need them and want to reach out to you?
Yeah, so my go-to place is Twitter. So for all the Bitcoin conversation, you can find me on Twitter at JML. And also on Coinbees, so coinbees.com. I'm part of the expert of the Coinbees Connect services. So if you have any consultation regarding mining and economics, you can reach me there, coinbees.com.
Awesome, dude. Well, thank you very much for coming out. And we'd love to have you on in another night. So without further ado, man, we're going to be timeful of your time. And we'll call this the episode. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.